Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
ladies and gentlemen. The call will be starting in about 3 minutes.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. And this is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. It's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy Is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known primarily for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of your remedies in the law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy Is in the Law. And Your Remedy Is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a network, though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But due diligence and educated yourself. Maybe the further you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. Every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for
this evening, folks. Thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, we have, I believe, a first-time caller tonight, and so I want to welcome them. My computer screen just went blank. Give it a second. It'll refresh up here. Just to for the first-time caller, I'll be asking, if I may, where you're from. I see Tulsa, Oklahoma here, phone number ending in 1316. I'm Michael Edward, and may I inquire as to who you are? What's your name, please?
Let's see, am I muted?
No, I unmuted you.
Oh, okay, there we go. Yeah, you know me as Charlie, and I have another phone, so now you have another number.
Oh, Charlie, you messed with me. Okay, you got me. All right, real good. Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. You betcha.
All righty. So let's see. Where were we? We started off with the 30,000-foot view a little over a couple of months ago. Then we covered citizenship. Our money system, the SESTK trust, the IRS. We talked about what is the United States. We spoke about the courts, the remedy that still exists. We talked about words and phrases or words and terms. And we also, the week before last, talked about the government and the church. Tonight, we're going to speak about the best kept secret. And that's where we'll pick up tonight. If you find the story, that if you want to call it a story, the chapters of this book that I've been reading to you, The Greatest Story Never Told, and that you find the things that we've talked about so far to be incredible, perhaps even unbelievable, then, well, all I can say is you ain't heard nothing yet. I say the best for last, or what some might consider the worst for last. It has to do with these things called liens. Black Law Dictionary defines a lien as, quote, a claim, encumbrance, or charge on property for payment of some debt, obligation, or duty, end quote. Liens are actually used to hold property as collateral for a debt, making certain that the property cannot be disposed of until the creditor's interest in that property has been retired. In some cases, they allow property to be seized and sold for the debt. As an example, think of your home. Think of foreclosure. If you borrowed money on your home to buy it or to remodel it or improve it, the lending institution would take a lien out against the property, keeping you from selling or otherwise disposing of your home until either the borrowed money had been fully repaid, including interest, or until the lending institution, the secured creditor, had agreed to do whatever sale or disposal that you wished for them to do. If the lending institution wishes to make certain that its lien against the property is the first lien, holding the position of being paid from all proceeds derived from the sale of said property until the full debt is discharged, it must file a document known as a UCC-1 with the Secretary of the State of the state in which the property is held, or as they like to say, resided. The UCC-1 must be signed only by the secured creditor in order to be valid if it is based upon a contract with the debtor. Only one UCC-1 can be filed on any given piece of property at any given time. And the secured creditor will be shown on this UCC-1 filing, and they are assured of being the first in line, first in time, to be paid. This secured creditor can then seize that property for resale if the debt owed to him is not discharged in the manner described in the agreement which created the lien in the first place. Any other claims to this property are secondary to this first lien and can only be enforced after the first lien has been satisfied. Therefore, a second lien only has significance and power once the first lien has been retired. The second lien does hold the option of buying out the first lien holder by satisfactorily discharging or paying off the first lien holder's claim, at which time they would then become the first lien holder, and then they could file their own UCC-1 on the property. The method I've just described applies to virtually all property in our current system. It even applies to properties such as corporations or companies. In the prior chapters that we've talked about, reading from this book, you may recall that I showed you that your name spelled in all capital letters was not truly your actual name, but rather the name of an artificial entity that is a corporation. Corporation is property, and it's subject to the property laws and to the liens. To fully understand this equation, you must understand how and why this corporation using your name was created. So let's take a trip back in time to 1933, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. This country was thrown into bankruptcy, as detailed in an earlier chapter that we read to you. At that point, there were only two things left that had value, the land and the people. This government, fearing for its very existence, remember, this is the United States that we're talking about. We're not talking about the states of America united in perpetual union. We're talking about their creation, the United States. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. This government, fearing for its very existence, decided to use its people to bail it out of this jam, this bankruptcy. So it took the good names of the people themselves and then fraudulently created instruments of worth through pledging these people into a state of servitude to the trust, the SSDK Trust. And as such, the citizens of the United States became nothing more than collateral for the debt owed by the United States to the banksters. Now remember, again, we're talking about United States citizens, i.e. 14th Amendment citizens, something that a court case that I repeat to you frequently, you become property in a franchise of the United States. It was originally crafted for the now Americans of African descent when they translated from being themselves property as slaves, having had their freedom under the 13th Amendment, were then translated into 14th Amendment citizens of the federal government. And remember, both New York and Pennsylvania offered them state citizenship, but they declined, considering that they would have more safety as a federal citizen against the biases and prejudices of the people of European descent that were so fresh and sore and wounded from the Civil War. So, on its face, such an act violates the Constitution and leaves the actors subject to charges of treason. So these deceivers came up with a really clever solution to their problem. They took all the birth certificates of the people. The birth certificates, now remember, belong to the state which created them. And this state is one of the states of the United States, posing as one of the Union states. It gets confusing. And they formed a corporation using the names found on these certificates and the persons to whom they were attached to as the basis and the value of the corporation. When the corporations were formed, the names of the living men and women and the new corporations were exact, except that the corporations' names were spelled out in all capital letters, indicating the difference between that being a corporation and that being a living man or woman who was supplying the true worth behind the corporation. The trust accepted the collateral and then set about to systematically make certain that all men and women would cease to use their natural being and would instead use this new artificial being created and owned by the state. All uppercase, S-T-A-T-E. The trust then attached its number, and you know that as your social security number, to its collateral for easy identification. If you're having trouble believing the facts that I've just spoke to you about, think about when the last time was that you received any formal letter, a document, a contract, an IRS statement, or a billing, any court papers, or anything of any official capacity from a government agency or body or from any corporation which did not have your name spelled with all capital letters. If you really want to be convinced, ask your bank, your credit card company, the Internal Revenue Service, any court, or any other official corporation or government agency to use your name properly spelled, that is, uppercase and lowercase, on any official documents referring to you. And what you'll find out is they will refuse. They will probably tell you the computer won't let them use upper and lower case in a name, which is probably true. That's the way they programmed it. And after you've proven this to yourself, why don't you just pause for a moment and ask yourself why? Certainly the spelling of your name in all capitals could not be that important, could it? The truth is, it is all that important. Through the use of this system, the state, all uppercase, S-T-A-T-E, has created corporations which it, in fact, owns. If you use your proper name, capital letters, upper and lowercase spelling, the all uppercase state does not own that because it was never given power over the flesh and blood man or woman. And by owning all of the corporations which do business within the all uppercase state, the all uppercase state can write whatever rules and regulations it desires, and there is no constitutional conflict because a corporation is not protected by the Constitution. The rights guaranteed by the Constitution to the American national can never be realized because everyone is acting through his corporation by consent, i.e., by contract. Therefore, those who would otherwise be an American national, having constitutional rights, protections, guarantees, well, they've become nothing more than corporations owned by the all uppercase state. Moreover, the American national who has become a, quote, citizen of the United States, it's a lowercase c, can do so only as a corporation, as an artificial entity. And thus he becomes property owned by the all uppercase state when he declares himself or allows the state to declare himself a citizen of the United States. So what really occurs when an American national becomes a corporation, that is, a citizen of the United States, is that two parallel entities that exist simultaneously with each other? One, the nom de guerre, that goes about performing all the business functions. The other, the living man who sits idly back, believing believing that he's in control. The all uppercase state deals only with the nom de guerre, over which it has total dominion, because it is the creator and it is the owner of that property. The all uppercase state never gains jurisdiction over the living man, that is, the American national. The courts are now all commercial in nature, as we've spoken about earlier, pointed out to you earlier. And that means that everything is related directly to equity in property, which is at issue in the cause before the court. Doesn't the phrase equity today ring a bell? How frequently it is being used? Not equality, equity. DEI, I think, is the acronym, the three capital letters. Knowing that the courts are commercial, we can now easily see why they must require that the name be in all capital letters in the court's style. The courts can only deal in equity, and there is nothing defining equity or definable inequity in a living man. Therefore, the courts can have no jurisdiction over a living man. Unfortunately, citizens of the United States are artificial entities. They're a creation of the all uppercase state. They're not living men. So the courts can assume unquestionable jurisdiction over citizens of the United States. Remember, the overriding presumption in every court is that you are a citizen of the United States, and that's proven with a Social Security number any time you enter the court. That's why we share with you the first words out of your mouth at any time you're communicating with a court or any lawful entity is that your appearance and your communication before them is not general appearance, but special appearance. And we'll talk about that, if you like, on tomorrow night's call, prayerfully with John. John had, by the way, had surgery last week. He has surgery frequently. He fell off a roof five months ago, and he periodically goes in and has, you know, in-house surgery in the hospital, but it's always been like a day or two to recover, and he's back on his feet until the next time. This surgery last week has been a hard blow to him, and in fact, he may not be on tomorrow night's call. We're expecting him. I spoke with him earlier today. He expects to be on the call tomorrow night, but, you know, something can happen and he won't be there. And if that's the case, then we'll continue what we've been doing on the Monday night call on Tuesday as we continue to read through this book, just to let you know. So, as in all tyrannical actions taken by this de facto government, it's not the de jure republic, this is a de facto democracy government, the remedy for this ruthless and deceitful action, which is taken by it, can be found within the rules and regulations which were contrived and written specifically for the purpose of misleading and enslaving the people. Your remedy's in the law. Oh, what a name. What a con. I think I'll write a website, www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. You might find it there. As in all the tyrannical actions that have been taken, to understand how to use this own system against them, you must think of two separate but real entities. You must think of them, one as a living man and one as the corporation. Both entities have the same and similar names, with only the physical demonstrable difference between being in the use of the capitalization within those that are spelling their names. One entity, the living man, if he is an American national, he owns everything, but has failed to take control of his possessions. The other, the corporation, is property of the all uppercase state, which was created for the express purpose of being a slave to this corporation, this trust. So now let's work on the remedy. When you become a party to any action which draws you into a court, your first act should be to properly identify yourself. And to do that, you use your own Christian name, properly spelled in upper and lower case letters. You should immediately claim to be one of the sovereign American people, and as such, a foreign state within the definition of the meaning of the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act of 1976. Did you know about that? You need to read the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act of 1976. This was where they corrected themselves to give you the out. Prior to 1976, prior to this Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, they were committing treason, and they knew it. So they corrected it in 1976. You should state that you have no Social Security number. And as proof of your sovereignty, you should attach and refer to an affidavit that traces your lineage back to one of the founding fathers, specifically a white male landowner in one of the 13 original colony or states. Back in 1783, that's the date that King George III recognized these people as sovereigns equal to him in the Treaty of Paris, 1789. The time of the adoption of the Constitution is another good date to tie yourself to. Or, if that's not applicable for you being one of the sovereignty, remember the three definitions that we've covered 100 times or more, hundreds of times, in the past, the three definitions of the United States. The first definition would be, I'm Michael Edward, the name of a sovereign, occupying the position analogous to other sovereigns in the family of nations. That's just what I talked about a moment ago. I've traced my history back not just to 1789, but all the way back to 1662, 42 years after the founding of Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. In the record, even I've taken it back to Scotland, all the way back to the 1100s, actually. So point being is that is the sovereignty. However, Union state citizens also enjoy constitutional rights, not as one of the sovereignty, but as a Union state citizen or someone, say, for, in my example, I am Michael Edward. I'm a Floridian domiciled in Florida, one of the states of America, united in perpetual union. That's the definition number three. And one thing I'm not is all uppercase Michael Edward, a citizen subject to the United States, domiciled in Washington, D.C., having residence in the state of Florida, all uppercase. That's not me. And that's an affidavit that is brought into all legal proceedings whatsoever. That done, you have established a prima facie claim, good on its face, unless challenged. That's going to be fun to see somebody challenge that, someone having firsthand knowledge, someone having authenticated evidence that you're not what you claim to be. That done, at this point in time, a challenge is highly unlikely. However, the more people who use this method, the greater the challenge, the likelihood of the challenge will become. Therefore, you should be well advised to research your heritage and have facts to back up your claim. Once you've established your capacity as one of the sovereign American people or as a citizen of one of the Union states, therefore a foreign state is now established under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. The court loses all jurisdiction over you unless your action falls under the exception given in Section 1605 of Title 28. If you file the counterclaim, which you are fully authorized to do, then only the counterclaim will be heard because the action brought against you must be dismissed. You're also free to bring an action against the government or any of its agencies under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act for any grievance you might have. However, when you do, you will now open yourself to a counterclaim from that party that you will not have sovereign immunity. It's important that you understand that the authority and the capacity that you must rely upon only comes from the original 13 states, possibly Texas as well, but that's a different issue for another claim, and also any of the Union states under the third definition. Your claim must be that you are a descendant of one of the original people, uppercase P, lowercase E-O-P-L-E, or you'll be ignored and you'll lose. So all of you that believe a California state citizen, uppercase C, is equal to a Pennsylvania state citizen, uppercase C, you need to think about that again. There are differences. So that concludes tonight's conversation with regards to reading out of this chapter. Next week we'll be bringing up about America's royal family. You're going to find that very, very interesting. So let's go ahead and open it up for questions. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, let's take a look there to see how many we've got sitting over there. You'll notice on the center right of your monitor, you have the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. In that rectangle, you have nothing. So put left click in there, type away your comment or your question. Underneath the rectangle, you see a place to put your name, some other information, hit submit. And when you hit submit, it pops up on my end. So, hi, Bruce, be right with you. So again, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot impress upon you enough how of paramount importance it is that you correct your political citizenship status. One thing that I want to share with you, let me backtrack on one thing here. Most of you know on this call that all my life, at 16 years of age, I went to work for Zale Jewelers for 8 years. they considered me an employee. For 8 years, I considered myself a paid apprentice. I learned their business model. I opened up my own retail jewelry store, and from there expanded and developed from being just a retailer following the same model that Zales had for their successful business to expanding into repairs on the premises. The repairs expanded into manufacturing. I then became a manufacturing, wholesale, and retail jeweler for like a quarter century, had a ball. Anyways, let me just go right to Bruce, and it'll pop back into my head, and I'll come back up with it. So go ahead, Bruce, what's up?
Hey, so this is really a question from last week. I had written down the question, and then we had to, I think John was talking, was not feeling well, and kind of had to drop off quickly. But the question came up to me with one of my buddies who is looking at correcting his status. He says, can one who does that, correct their status, get a diplomatic license plate?
I'm glad you asked that question. And the answer is that John would say, yes, it's been done a couple of times. John was not a part of it. When we have several dynamics in play that we're not able to move forward with until the finances are available for us to bring in additional paralegals and have a cool place to sit and work from and things like that. But one of the things that we're going to be doing the moment the funds become available, I think you all know what I'm talking about when we talk about the global currency reset and things like that. One of the things that we're going to do is here in Florida, John will join with me on a trip to Tallahassee, where we're going to sit down with the head of the Department of Motor Vehicles and also attempt to have the Secretary of State there as well and lay out for them the court cases that John has gone through where the benefit of having corrected your political citizenship status has manifested itself within the transcripts of the litigation, and just basically say to them, look, you are our public servants, and we have the greatest respect for you, for the work that you do, and we appreciate you, et cetera, but we want you to understand that there are remedies that are available to us that are very, very costly, both to your corporation that you work for, and the corporations that are involved, being state, county, things like that, as well as those in their individual capacity with regards to deprivation of rights under color of law and with regards to the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. So what we would like from you is for you to freely present to any and all of us that request it from you, upon proof of our claim of our citizenship status, a plate that when it's run by the law enforcement officer, they will have a preview that says basically the same thing that when they run the real ID presented in from the State Department of the United States that says, do not investigate, do not detain, release immediately, lifetime concealed carry weapons permit. That's what we want the officer to see on the tag when they run it. And if not, this is your notice that you'll be involved in any claim of right that may be violated by one of the people that you have out there enforcing your laws. And we hope to accomplish that.
Cool.
Good. Anything else?
Nope, that was it. Thanks.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate you very much. Duncan, good to see you again.
Hello, hello. Thank you, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
When it comes to correcting our status, so once we go to court and we say we're here by special appearance, I believe was the phrase.
Right, not general, special.
Special appearance.
Right.
Now, my question is, the reason we say that is because the paper that we were served with our name in all caps, we're saying that that's not me. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So the whole conversation about the name is all caps, whatever they're talking about, they don't have jurisdiction over me.
Not the flesh and blood man, no.
Right.
You're a Virginian. You're a Virginian domiciled in Virginia. You're not a resident. You're not domiciled in Washington, D.C. and a resident of Virginia. You are a Virginian.
Okay. Because that name in all caps is a resident of Washington, D.C.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And just remember, you know, you went into this, but there's so much that you left out of what you need to do in as far as presenting to the courts, et cetera. And that is paramount to your success, number one. Number two, you have to be so comfortable in what you're saying, so secure in what you're saying, that they read that you know what you're talking about when you're talking to them. You're looking them dead in the eye. You're not insecure in any way whatsoever because you own this material. And when you get to that position and you have the evidence that you put before them in proper order and things like that, and you've said the right things about your honor today, as in any time I appear in a courtroom, my appearance is special. It is never general. And a special appearance is to challenge jurisdiction, which this court can't navigate. It has to be another court that has a hearing just on this evidence of jurisdiction. And, you know, you've got the court cases. Yeah, I've supplied them for you in the PDF once we were colonists.
Okay. Well, that satisfies my question. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Let me check Freedom's Radio real quick. Anybody else has a question, press star 2 in your keypad. And let me refresh here. Blink. Nope. Okay. Any other questions, press star 2 on your keypad. I'll be glad to do what I can for you. Press star 2. Otherwise, I'm going to say good night. Get back to a great movie. Get some popcorn popping. Just teasing. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, or we're going to say goodnight. Again, just as a reminder, if you came in a little bit later, John has confirmed that he will be on the call tomorrow night, and we will continue as the stomach churns regarding Mr. T and his exploits, a live case being litigated right now with the fact that he is one of the sovereignty, actually. His birthright goes all the way back to that time when his people came over, I think from France originally. Anyways, point being is that if John has a lapse, then I will continue instead of next week with the America's Royal Family chapter. I'll be doing it tomorrow night, and then the following Monday we'll be doing something else again. So anyways, press star 2 on your keypad. I'm refreshing one more time just in case something got locked up. Nope, nobody else. Thank you so much for joining us. Tell your friends, please. These calls don't cost them anything, and it's such an important thing to learn. What I was starting to say was that when I retired out from being a manufacturing jeweler, I knew all about our family history. My people from New England and you know, one of my uncles, eight times removed, actually hosted George Washington the week that he had, it was a Christmas holiday, a Christmas party at his house. And this was just before Washington crossed the Delaware. He stayed in our house that night, like my uncle's house. I was very steeped in this, but I had no idea of what it meant. And we've got to share this information with everyone. We really do. Go ahead, Charlie.
Thanks. I've never, pursued a deep history, and I imagine it's not a simple question to answer, but there's got to be some tips on how you would even approach that. Do you have anything initially to say how you would?
I have an information provider that does your history.
Oh, okay.
In other words, you provide as much information as you can. You start with your siblings, then you go with your mother and father, then you list their siblings and their mother and father on both sides, and you just keep building out as far as you can. That's what you present to me, and then I hand it over to this young lady, and she gets to work, and sometime within 4 to 6 weeks usually, sometimes 8 weeks, she comes back with a complete tree for you based upon the public record. Yeah, $1,000.
Okay. Having that information, then it's a little easier to listen to why and when that's useful. In other words, when a person goes through the process of correcting their recorded status,
mm-hmm.
When is it really necessary to have that history in a court case or?
Well, with anything, let's just pretend, Charlie, that you're a good taxpayer. You've been paying your taxes every year. Well, maybe next year you'd like to send them a letter and say, I'm confused. The letter would be provided for you and we'll go from there. And maybe they'll come back and eventually say, you know, you're right. You don't have a duty to pay tax.
For myself,
if there was no other benefit than on my tombstone, here lies a free man. That to me is good by itself. But no, I have this for any and all purposes.
Okay. Well, good to know there's a way to get that done. Thank you.
Yes, sir, there is. Just get back with me and we'll take care of it for you.
All right.
Thank anything else, Charlie?
No.
You're welcome, sir.
Yep.
Jennifer Sue, how do you do?
Hey. I had a question about that. Now it's left my brain. So.
you too?
But I'll ask another question. If you take documents to a county clerk and you don't, and they're applying for an exemption or an exception type of thing, and you don't get them recorded, and they say you don't get these documents back, does that mean they're going to throw them away type of thing, or can they? Because there's no record that they were ever handed in, or is it...
Okay, two comments. First, there's several types of recordations. There's even a private file that most of the recorders don't even know about until you get their supervisor in. They go, we can do that privately, and it's a private record. You know that through your litigation that anytime you file something, you're making five original copies, five originals, right? And you're getting five notaries done if they require notarization. And when you go to the clerk, you hand the clerk one, and they receive that, dock it, and stamp it. And then the other four, they also can date stamp it, received as being a copy. So that you have, the one that they have received, which, you don't care what they do with it at that point because you've got proof that they, four other pieces of paper that prove that they received it. And, we also encourage you to have a safe place for at least one of those filings somewhere off your property. Houses burned down. Airport hangars burned down, and you lose everything. So it's always good to have original somewhere else as well, if you can.
Well, I just went down to file for record the deed, and they gave me back the deed with their receipt, but
mm-hmm.
all of the whole stack of 100 pages that I had proving that I'm a exception, not an exemption, they didn't stamp mm-hmm. or anything. And I only had one copy because I didn't think about
yeah.
in that situation.
Yeah, it's always the same. 5 originals of everything, every time.
So should I go back and just get them to record what I...
Yeah, but you need to have a conversation with John regarding the types of recordations. You have one where when you have it recorded, it's kind of like when you buy a car. You know, you have your manufacturer statement of origin, the MSO. If you pay cash for your car and the dealer does not hand you the MSO that they send it to the state capitol, the Department of Motor Vehicles or whatever, you've literally just given the state your car. You've kept the right to use it, but you've given them your car. So conversely, if you file deeds and things like that in one way, you're actually giving them the deed to your property. So you're going to be very careful about how the type of filing that it is. And that's a conversation with John, not with me.
Well, I had on 2 different pages of the deed written, file for record, not for registration or contract. But
okay.
Huh?
I said, okay.
But she gave back the page that says record and return to Jennifer Hansen. It was like they had taken that off and re-photographed it, recopied it, and taken that wording off that page,
yeah.
even though it's still on the deed page.
Yeah. So, again, if you had, you know, multiple copies and you've got them, you know, what the expression is clocked and docked on your receipts, then that is what you filed in there. And, of course, on the bottom of each page, it should have, you know, one of how many pages? What you said, 70 pages?
Probably about 100. I don't know.
100 pages. So you have one of 100. The next page says 2 of 100. Third one, three of 100. So you've got that on the bottom of your pages. You're showing that that's what you've turned in.
Uh-huh.
Again, it's John that you need to be asking these questions on. I know about it, but I can't articulate it.
I know. Well, I'm just asking you because he hasn't been available. And
I know.
This has happened. So I'm just wondering, should I go back and have them? I mean, is it normal for them to take the original deed when they're filing it and keep it for a month, or why won't they accept the copy of the deed?
See, I would never leave the deed with the original deed with them. No ifs, ands, or buts. I'd file a copy of the deed, but I wouldn't, you know, and that would be a public filing for record only. When you're at a closing table and the deed is handed to you, you know, congratulations, then the attorney says, let me have it back. You say, no, thank you, and you just put it back in your purse or whatever. And usually it's also wise to have, you know, some security there, personal security, to enforce the fact that they won't try to strong-arm you.
Yeah, well, I guess I did the wrong thing, and they have the bloody original.
Well, there's always a remedy. There's always a remedy. So let's not worry about that right now. I spoke with John twice today. His voice was strong. So, we're hoping everything's going to be good for tomorrow. Maybe, give me a text tomorrow when you're up and at him, and I'll see if I can't get you on the phone call with him real quick.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
All right. Anything else, Jennifer?
I can't remember what the other thing was still, so I guess not.
Well, when it comes to you, just send me a text on it, okay?
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, I'm going to say nighty night. Let me go check Freedom's Radio real quick one more time. Bum, bum. Nope, nothing there. All right, well, listen, thank you all for joining us this evening. It was a great call. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific, same phone, same pen. And we'll just have Brother John share with us prayerfully. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.